and welcome to Radio Shalom. I'm Deb Levy, and today I'm in the studio with Jules Geddy, and he's the president of B'nai B'rith, a member of the Auckland Hebrew congregation, and was part of the delegation that went down to Christchurch this week to show support for our Muslim brothers and sisters and make sure that we could do whatever we could to be with our brothers and sisters in solidarity and to find out what support we can offer at this really difficult time. Jules, thank you for being here.
It's an absolute pleasure, even though we are so sad and we are horrified. But it's really a pleasure to be here and to be talking to you and to be talking to all our listeners. Hope you're all well.
And one of the things that's happened over the last week in New Zealand is the huge outpouring of compassion, solidarity, and a feeling of us really being one in New Zealand. And I think that it makes a lot of sense that today, when we mark a week since this awful tragedy, Jules and I are able to come together and reflect on the experiences we had in Christchurch. And what was really amazing being down there is the whole time, the people in the community who are going through this horrible tragedy were checking in with us, saying, are you okay? Is someone looking after you? We were in the community centre where all the wraparound services are being provided. And yet all the people that we were there to support were trying to offer us hospitality and love.
And they did. They supported us. It was amazing. I spoke to maybe 30 people. All of them said, thank you for coming. Thank you for the support. And I said to them, you're mourning. So am I.
Absolutely.
And your words are comforting me. And that's the feeling that I had there. Everybody was so supportive. But you know what? It comes from the top also. Our leader, Jacinda, she came on television and she said, this is not New Zealand.
Mm.
And I firmly believe that. This is not New Zealand. And she said, we must do everything possible. And she has already.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, we must support each other. And that's what we do. And I saw that in Christchurch, didn't you?
Absolutely. And I have to say up here in Auckland as well.
Totally.
One of the things that I found really beautiful, Jules, when we were on the plane with Rabbi Friedler from Auckland and Rabbi Tal from Wellington and Juliet Moses from the Jewish Council, was the way in which even the pilot and the air hostesses and the air stewards, everybody who came in contact with us was giving extra warmth, extra compassion, whether it was mentioned or not. There was a real sense of looking after each other. And I saw it as well with the passengers, just everybody helping each other. And anyway, thank God New Zealand's a really friendly, warm country, but you could feel the extra level of support. And did you hear what the pilot said when we took off as well, Jules?
Tell everybody.
So the pilot was addressing everybody, as they always do when you take off on a flight, and giving you the usual information. And then just added a note afterwards to say not only that we're all with the survivors of Christchurch and the families of those who passed away, but also to remember that there were people on the flight who were being reunited with family, and that it could be a really difficult time, and to be sensitive to the other people on the plane.
Absolutely lovely. And I had a little incident sitting next to us on the other, across the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Muslim lady and she was in mourning. I didn't actually get to talk to her, but she was crying. And mm-hmm. there was another lady who came and gave her a hug, and both of them were crying. And then when we were getting off, I just put my hand towards her and I asked her, what's the traditional greeting?
Mm.
And she said to me, the fact that you're here is a greeting.
Aww.
And then I asked her specifically, and she said, for men, you put your arms out
mm-hmm.
and give each other a hug. And for women, you put your hand on your heart and you make a little gesture of a bow.
Oh, beautiful.
And that's what happened. Didn't you see that throughout all the people that we met?
Absolutely. And I have to say, I was very grateful coming from a Jewish background that we understood a lot of the different laws and customs and traditions that our Muslim brothers and sisters are dealing with at the moment. And the fact that in Orthodox Judaism, we also have that men and women who aren't married don't have physical contact. I didn't find it difficult to go into an environment where it was expected that we'd find ways to show our love and compassion for people who aren't of the gender that we identify with and need to do that in a way that doesn't include physical touch. For me, that was comfortable and familiar.
You also look pretty good wearing a headscarf.
Yeah,
one of the sisters.
Yeah, I do. I asked one of the ladies that we met if it was appropriate for me to cover my hair. I was very aware that we were in that space as insiders in the sense that we're there in support, but outsiders in the sense that we're not of the Muslim faith. And I found, and I'm sure our listeners will find, that generally if you ask respectfully what's appropriate, people are very happy to give you the information that you need.
And so the traditional greeting is Shalom Aleichem.
Aleichem Shalom.
Yes, exactly, the greeting and the response, that's Salam Aleichem.
Yeah, very similar to the almost Hebrew identical greeting as well. Almost.
And what is it? It's peace. Peace on you.
Absolutely.
And that's what we felt there.
Yeah.
So we started off on Friday when I heard the news. I was actually in the car.
Mm-hmm.
It was around about 3 o'clock. I was listening to BBC and I heard the news. And total shock, total horror.
Yeah.
And this was, when did it take place? Around about 2 o'clock, quarter to 2. And I'm listening to the news an hour later on BBC.
Yeah.
It was amazing. So I started crying. And we didn't know the extent of the horror because we just knew that there was an attack. And as time unfolded, the horror became so tragic. And, you know, we always say, you save a life, you save the world. And if you lose a life, you destroy the world.
Yeah.
So at first I think we heard 9 people had lost their lives. And then it became 20 and then 49 and just...
I'm glad you said that, though, Jules, that just even a single person losing their life is tragedy. And as the numbers rose, it was just incomprehensible.
Incomprehensible.
And still is. I mean, I think everybody that I've spoken to around the world outside of New Zealand, a lot of people have been in touch. People understand that this affects all of us, you know. And
yep.
A lot of people and friends overseas have been in touch. And they can't believe something like that would happen here in New Zealand.
They can't believe, correct.
Yeah.
But I'll come back to that.
Okay.
I'm pretty strong on that.
Yeah.
A little earlier I was talking to Richard and I said the news in Southern Africa is horrible.
Mm.
The cyclone Idai, 2.5 million people displaced.
My goodness.
Water storms going 10 miles inland.
Mm.
I don't know how many people lost their lives. It's a tragedy.
Mm.
Here in Christchurch, it's a tragedy. The outpouring of support and sadness, I guess, is the same. So how come? And what's the difference between the two? Difference is that Christchurch was murder.
Mm.
Mozambique is natural disaster.
Yeah.
Murder has a worse effect than natural disasters, even though natural disasters, there's more loss of life, more people displaced.
It's true, and I think the difference that you've articulated, Jules, is one of the reasons why we've seen the kind of response that we have. I mean, poor Christchurch, this is not the first time Christchurch has had to deal with huge loss and challenges and difficulties, but last time, it was it was an earthquake, yeah. And
it was horrible.
And we know
people who died in the earthquake.
Yeah, but like you said, there's something about the fact that this is perpetrated by a human being that makes it even harder to deal with.
Much harder. I'm still crying.
Same.
My good wife is crying. And especially, there was a 3-year-old boy, I think, who died.
Mm.
And every time she sees us, she cries because we identify with that. We have a young grandchild, and it's just unbearable.
Yeah.
So we can imagine what all the people feel like. And yet, when we were there on Tuesday, I did not see a display of grief. I think everybody was already, at that time, giving thanks that they were there.
There was a lot of gratitude. A lot of people that I spoke to spoke with gratitude about all kinds of things, about thank God being alive, about the outpouring of support, about having community. You know, the one thing that was causing people a lot of distress when we were there, in the Islamic tradition, just like in the Jewish tradition, the way in which you treat a person after they've passed away is extremely important. So the way in which the body is sat with, the way in which the body is ritually washed, the way in which it's treated with respect, the prayers that are said over the body, and the speed with which the body is returned to the earth is of utmost importance. And when we were there, one of the challenges was the communication around when the families are going to be reunited with those who are lost and able to bury them and look after them the way they wanted to. And amidst all that gratitude and amidst the grief, there was also real frustration and the challenges of how many different cultures are navigating through this at the same time. I have to say, from Auckland, I thought of the community down there as two communities because there were two mosques. And actually, the community is so diverse. You've got so many different nationalities. There were interpreters from so many different countries because there are people who don't even speak the same language. Yes, they're part of the same community, but they come from very different backgrounds, traditions. There are different nuances in the ways in which they practice their religion. And so that meant that there were a whole added level and layers of complexity. And one of the community leaders was explaining to me that it's very difficult for some of the people who have more recently come from countries that do not have the same kind of infrastructure as New Zealand to try and explain to them that the bodies need to be treated in a certain way because there are going to be criminal proceedings, and that every T needs to be crossed and every I needs to be dotted to make sure there are no technical reasons or ways in which the horrific man who did this is able to use our legal system to circumvent the course of justice. And to explain that to somebody who's from a place where if someone passes away without working with any kind of administration, you go through the mourning rituals, you bury them the same day.
Same day. There was a lot of tension there. When we got there on Tuesday, there was tension over this issue that the bodies hadn't been released.
Yeah.
But I think the police handled it pretty well. They calmed everybody, and I think everybody understood the procedure and what had to be done. And I think they did it pretty quickly. I mean, there were 50 bodies.
Oof. I think regardless of what's going on, there are so many emotions. And I had a really interesting conversation with the woman who actually called the police and was on the phone from the bathroom in the mosque at the time of the shooting. And she said she was on the phone. They stayed on the phone with her. It took them 10 minutes and 20-something seconds to get there. And she was full of appreciation for the way the police had handled the situation. She said that, you know, she'd heard some complaints that there were people who were upset and saying, how come it took so long? She said, I was there. You know, things moved so quickly. They were so professional. The operator that was on the phone with me stayed with me the whole time and was talking me through it. And she really believed that when emotions are running high, really, people are angry and distressed in the direction of the perpetrator. Some people are finding it from a faith perspective, it's really challenging. And those emotions get redirected to different places based on what's happening on the day. So there have been cases of people getting distressed and upset for little things, because really their distress and their upset is about the big things. And that's a normal part of grief, but it's really difficult.
Let's also bear in mind that this is the first time such an incident has occurred in New Zealand, and please God, it will never, ever happen again.
Amen.
But the reaction of the police in these circumstances was fantastic.
Amazing.
And we've got to mention the two police, I think they just finished their training, and they rammed the car of, I don't even want to mention names, and then took him out and arrested him.
Yeah.
There are stories, I don't know if they're true now, that he was actually on his way to a third site to commit more murder when they rammed his car.
Yeah.
And that's brave.
Absolute heroes.
Instant reaction.
Yeah.
So let's come to on Friday, when all this took place, services, religious services, were cancelled.
For both the Muslim communities and for the Jewish communities.
Yes, for fear of any further violence.
So some of our listeners might be confused about why the synagogue would be closed. And in the manifesto, Jews were also listed as a target. And also there's often a correlation between with white supremacist groups, between the way they feel about Jewish communities and the way they feel about Islamic communities. And so the police were very concerned that there might be a risk to the Jewish community as well. And in addition to that, while it was unclear who the perpetrator was and what they were doing and whether they were working alone or with another group, there was also concern that the synagogue and the Jewish school could be targets as well. And so for that reason, the police put our community centre and the second community centre in Auckland as well on lockdown. But before that happened, our rabbi was able to go and retrieve a Torah, so our holy text, and also a range of different books that we use for our prayer services. And we were able to continue with our prayers. It's been 150 years of uninterrupted worship every Shabbat in Auckland. And we were really determined that at a time when we all needed prayers the most, when those who were mourning and those who were injured needed prayers the most, that we would keep praying.
Wasn't that marvellous?
It was incredibly meaningful. It was really, really difficult. But the only thing that would have been more difficult is not doing it.
It's not doing it. Now, following on that, I learned from the rabbi, this is a time of redemption of the Jews, a time of saving of the Jews, Purim.
Right, so the festival of Purim that we spoke about previously here on Radio Shalom.
And he referred me to a part which says, Ish va Ish, a man and a man, relative to the story of Purim. And so the commentators say, why Ish va Ish? Well, the two Ishes, two men in the story, are Mordechai and Haman. Mm-hmm. Mordechai was the good and Haman the bad, the evil. And so commentators say that the first Ish was Mordechai and the second one, Va-ish, was Haman. Now, Va-ish also has the same letters, I think, or the root of the word despair. And he said this is a time when we must eliminate the bad, the Va'ish, and therefore we must not despair. And that's, I was asked on the project with Jeremy Corbett what the message, what my message is, and that's my message. My message is do not despair.
Yeah.
And I think that's happening. The people, starting from the top, starting from Jacinda, we do not despair.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it was unbelievable sitting in the synagogue. The parasha for the week, well, the maftia, it's Parashat Zahor. And we read in this parasha about the Jewish people walking through the desert after they've escaped from Egypt. And they are attacked from behind by this evil, evil force, this evil group, Amalek. And the people who are attacked are attacked from behind, and women, children, the older people, the weak. And to be reading about that at a time when we were mourning what had happened, it made us very aware that there are still dark forces in the world and that we need to combat them, that we need to, like you said, if there's hatred and evil in the world, we need to combat it with love and goodness.
And we are. Can I ask you this question? Do you think that this horror, this tragedy, has divided the nation?
No, quite the opposite. Yeah.
Quite the opposite, eh?
It's brought us together. There's a Rabbits and Tzipora Heller talks about the way that whenever something happens, the one question that's always relevant is how can I use this to move forward?
Right.
And the way in which everyone has responded to this is the epitome of looking forward. You know, everybody is looking at how can we make things better? How can we support each other? How can we be more loving? And even the questions that are being asked about how and why this has happened are all with a future focus. You know, the reforms that are taking place in New Zealand, the gun laws, it's with a future focus. Yeah, the questions about how we can best support the Muslim community is with a future focus.
Well, let me tell you that many years ago I did learning on crisis intervention. When there's a traumatic event and somebody's in crisis, they need therapy, what's the first thing that we have to do? The underlying and only rule, or the main rule of crisis intervention is, and it's pretty difficult to actually say this at this time, but it is, for every loss, there's a gain. Now, how can we think that there's a gain in the face of 50 lives that were stolen? It's difficult, but the philosophy is that there is a gain, and I'm seeing it now. I'm seeing how the country has shown outpouring of love, of support, how our leaders have reacted so quickly, how people have come together. That's a gain.
So one of the women in the community centre who lost friends and relatives in the attack was talking about what she's seen happening with her daughter. And her daughter, going through a teenage phase, had stopped covering her head. And she kind of felt embarrassed about covering her head and she didn't like to do it. And since the attack took place, she's put back on her head covering and she feels like the way that people look at her is different now. Whereas people used to sometimes look at her with what she perceived as suspicion or even just a bit of judgment. Now people are looking at her with love, with respect, with openness. And the mother was saying, like, she can already see that what this has done to her daughter's Muslim identity is one of those tiny little gains that have come out of such a horrific situation.
That's heartwarming.
Yeah.
But on a global scale, when we talk about our three religions, it's quite heartwarming that Jeremy Corbyn on the project got three, one of each Christian, Muslim and Jew, to sit on the same couch and answer questions. And at the end of a session, everybody hugged each other. And I think his message was quite simple, that we have diverse religions, but we're all people.
Oh, we have a lot more in common than we have differences.
So let's start with the creation. The creation, God created human. Didn't create a Jew or a Christian or a Muslim. He created a human. Jew came with Abraham. That was 3,000 years later.
Yeah.
And then Christianity came 5,000 years later. And Islam came 5,600 years later. But we're all from the same source.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I hope and I pray, will be part of the New Zealand way of life. It is, and it will continue.
Amen.
That's my prayer.
Jules, it's lovely when you talk about the three of you sitting on the couch, you know, being interviewed on the project. It reminds me of a beautiful quote by Rabbi Sacks, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. And he says, the single greatest antidote to violence is conversation.
Conversation.
Speaking our fears, listening to the fears of others, and the sharing of vulnerabilities, discovering a genesis of hope. And that's, you know, I think, that's the other beautiful thing, is the conversations that are taking place are healing conversations. We went down to Christchurch with a hope that we could offer some support, our prayers, and also on a practical level to find out and target our generosity. You know, there are so many members of the community who want to give and they want to make sure that that generosity goes to the place where it's needed most. And yet what people really needed to do was talk. I mean, I didn't ask anyone anything about their stories. I just went and greeted people. And they needed to talk and the conversations just flowed. People needed to tell their stories again and again.
They still do.
And sometimes that conversation is what makes the difference.
How was I'll call her our guide from Ponsonby Mosque. She did exactly that. She said, let's keep the conversation going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I mention something on support?
Mm-hmm.
We do support in terms of prayer and love and care, but we also need to support financially.
Mm-hmm.
And we at B'nai B'rit have opened a relief fund, a banking account, and we ask all our listeners, yourselves and your friends and anybody that you see, whether Jewish or non-Jewish, to help make a contribution. Please email our office, and the address is office.bnaibrit@gmail.com.
Could you spell B'nai B'rit for us, please?
B'nai B'rit, it's all lowercase, so it's office.bnaibrit, bnaibrit@gmail.com. We'll supply the bank account number and give you a receipt.
Thank you, Jules. And I just want to add in a thought from Pirkei Avot, from the Ethics of the Fathers, where it says, it's not our obligation to complete the task, but neither are we free to desist entirely from it.
Oh,
yeah.
Lovely.
And the idea is that actually no individual in New Zealand is expected to provide all of the support that this community needs right now. But every individual in New Zealand has an obligation to do something. So even if it's just a small contribution that you can make or a small message that you can give, it's something that we, is upon all of us. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And so our call for financial, thank you, Deb, that includes not just financial, send us messages. We'll make sure that they get to the right people.
Beautiful. Jules, before we go today, one of the other things I wanted to touch on as well is how much the response has meant to the community down there. For all of those listening out there who have posted a message, given a donation, who have shared a thought with somebody, all of that is really warming and supporting and making a huge difference to the community. Of all the people I spoke to, you know, there wasn't one who didn't mention how supported and loved they feel. And that is a tribute to the whole of New Zealand. I mean, everywhere you go, there are beautiful things happening. And I love the idea that what this evil person tried to do was create violence, hatred, and destroy. And yet, the impact has been the absolute opposite.
The opposite. The impact, what he tried to do is create despair. That's what terror is. Mm-hmm. Terror is to commit some act which then puts uncertainty and fear into the minds and hearts of people. He's failed.
Yeah, failed. Absolutely.
Thank God.
Thank God.
So on this outpouring of love, you'll remember when we went walking, we saw in the grounds across the road from the mosque, there were flowers and candles and pictures of the deceased. And I don't know if you remember, when we were already on our way back, we walked past a tree, and I think there were 100 people in line. This is 4 days later, still putting down flowers for a deceased. I started crying.
Yeah.
Four days later.
It was beautiful. And this is something that will be in our consciousness for much, much longer. Yeah.
So thank you, everybody, for listening. Deb, it's such a pleasure to be sitting here talking with you and to our public.
Absolutely, Jules, and it was a privilege to be part of this experience with you. For all those who are listening at home and want to share this program with someone else, it will be online at the Planet FM website. And I would like to thank our sponsors, Nature Bee, because they're the ones who are helping us to keep the conversation going. And we're very grateful to be able to do so.